for I know that agony awaits, but I hold another precious light in my mind's eye. A wildfire roars through me, blazing through my veins like they are dry brush. I hold on to the scorching light, although everything within me is shrieking to let go. Another incision on my back. I clamp my teeth down on a scream. The pain brightens as a sun under my skin flares its singeing rays. Stop. Please stop. I dig my fingernails into the table. I feel as though I am being dipped in a pool of flames. I cannot do another. I cannot. She's done, says Devon. That's enough.
The gate has been opened,
Austin says.
We cannot stop or she will smolder to ash.
Does he not see that I already am smoldering? I open my eyes to sneering shadows. Steam fills the air, blurring light into the dark. Indira swings her hands in circles and sprays a light mist to cool the room, but it vaporizes before it reaches me. Devon bends over near my face, his brow puckered. Sweat drips off his nose, and his cheeks are red from the heat.
Kali, close your eyes.
I cannot.
Urgency disbands his calm.
You must finish this.
Tears stream from my eyes, puffing to steam before they roll down my cheeks. My chest scalds so badly that I fear someone has replaced my heart with blazing coals.
Close your eyes and pick a light. More calm, more urgency. You can do this, Kali.
I do as Devon asks, and the light explodes as I am cut 3 times at once. I scream, a feral cry, and buck against the table. Agony leashes itself to my spine. Hands lash me down. I have no words, only sobs that rise up from a place of anguish, like a pressure exploding from my center. The stars behind my eyes fly at me. I have no stamina to hide from them. Upsurge after upsurge strikes, each fiery whirlwind accompanied by a quick, deliberate cut on my back. Bleeding quells the firestorm, and the swells of agony shrink to waves, then ripples, until finally the biting scores diminish from a lancing pain to a sweet release. My body hums a steady flow of heat, but the intensity is softer, gentler now. A banked fire. A cooling pot of boiling water. A warmth that does not destroy, but feeds. A tender hand strokes my damp face.
Kali, it's done.
I pry one eye open and see Devon's concerned gaze.
Did I hurt you? I say.
He tucks his hand away, but not before I spot blisters on his palm. His mouth slides up on one side.
To touch you, it was worth it.
I use the last of my strength to smile. Then I close my eyes and drift off beneath the light of a single perfect star. I cannot say if I am out 10 minutes or 10 seconds, but when I awake, my back does not burn. Across from me, Indira wraps Devon's hand. Beside them on the table sits a mound of bloodied towels and an empty water pitcher.
You did well,
Austin says from my other side. I turn my head to look at him. He fingers a lock of my hair.
Tarek always had a weakness for women's hair. Your hair is like midnight, as was Yasmin's.
You knew her.
She was close to our previous Buddha leader, Kishan.
He releases my tresses.
He was a burner, like you.
What are you?
A trembler.
I remember what I have read about tremblers. Hostin can wield the land as a weapon. Reminded of how dangerous he is, I redirect the conversation back to Yasmin.
How did Yasmin and Kishan meet?
Raja Tarek invited us to Vani to discuss reinstating virtue guards. Buddhas served on every Raja's council up until Tarek's great-grandfather did away with them. We were in talks about joining Tarek's council when Kishan met Yasmin. He loved her at first sight. Neither I nor anyone else could keep him from her.
Austin's gaze drifts inward, remembering.
Before long, Yasmin was with child. Tarek believed she was carrying his heir, but Yasmin knew it was Kishan's child. They knew she couldn't hide their child's paternity once it was born, as the infant would be a Buta, like its father. So, when Yasmin was heavily pregnant, she and Kishan tried to run away. Tarek caught them before they left the palace. He confined Yasmin to her chambers and executed Kishan. Yasmin's grief over losing Kishan started her labor early, and ultimately, that was the end of her and their infant boy.
I cannot believe that I have not heard of this scandal. Tarek speaks worshipfully of his first wife. I never would have guessed that Yasmin had betrayed him.
Kishan had the Jala with him when they were caught. We did not know of his death until Tarek ambushed our peacekeeping party. I was the only one to escape. Tarek held on to the Jala and has hunted our people since.
The warlord's ebony eyes, two granite pebbles, meet mine.
Yasmin foresaw that Tarek would be the ruin of Tarachand. Tarek wanted to use our powers to expand his empire. He never bore love or respect for Buddhas, but Yasmin did.
Austin holds out a dagger.
This was hers. She would want the person who ends Tarek to have it.
He lays the dagger near my face. It is a twin to the one Mathura gave me. The turquoise hilt comes into focus, along with the gaps in Tarek's past. His hatred for Buddhas is a motivation I do not know if I can outmatch. But my alliance with Hostin is complete. I have one more question for the warlord. I never met my parents. Did you know them? Hostin shakes his head, and my hope falls like a foot stamping on my chest. If the brethren and Buddhas cannot tell me about my parents, I doubt that I will ever know.
Regardless of who they are, your parents would be proud of you,
says Hostin.
And you should be proud of your heritage.
It's too early to tell how I feel. One or both of my parents passed down their powers to me. A legacy that left an unseen mark but unites me with Hostin, Indira, and Brock. I may not have found my family, but I have found my people. Brock comes in and flaps a hand in front of his face.
It's hot in here,
he says.
Viraji, it's time to go.
Devon helps me down from the table.
Indira closed your incisions, but you still have shallow scratches. She says they will fade by tomorrow.
And your hand? I ask.
It will be better by morning.
I thank Indira, and Devon helps me quickly repin and drape my sari. I strap the second dagger, concealed, to my waist. My back is stiff, and my skin feels stretched thin, but there is little pain. I am simply drained of strength. Devon supports me up the steps to the chapel. Brother Shaten is speaking with a girl. He turns. Anjali? I pull up short, and Anjali bows with a smirk. My gaze bounces from face to face, seeking an explanation for why she is here. Devon is faster at piecing it together.
Anjali is your informant?
Devon asks his brother. Brock shrugs.
I could do worse. You have, if I remember correctly.
Brock slides his brother a knowing look.
We cannot all be with the Viraji.
Devon flushes, and I sling a scowl at Brock to silence him. Brother Shaten hurries over.
They know the Viraji is missing. You must return immediately.
Devon helps me toward the passageway. Anjali falls into step with us. So you agreed to my father's bargain, she remarks. My eyebrows jump. Hostin is Anjali's father? Gods! I study her profile for a resemblance to him, but do not find it. Still, there is one commonality they must share. Anjali is also a Buddha, probably a trembler like her father. I suppose this means I cannot kill you, Anjali says. She purses her lips in dissatisfaction and strides ahead to Brock. I glower after her. Mathura said Tarek picked up Anjali off the street. How could Anjali have planned that?
Her father must have encouraged her to charm the Raja. Devin shakes his head. I should have suspected she was involved. Tarek doesn't take in many beggars.
Austin's dedication alarms me straight through, chipping into my confidence about our agreement. He has been exploiting his daughter as bait to infiltrate the palace. The warlord has no limit to how far he will go to dethrone Tarek. Why doesn't Austin ask Anjali to kill the Raja? I ask.
The Raja isn't interested in using Anjali as Yasmin's host, Devin says. Anjali could try to win the tournament and wed the Raja, but unless Tarek reveals the book, it wouldn't matter how close she got to him.
Of course, killing the Raja is not Hostin's chief concern. It is retrieving the Jale. He presumes Tarek will reveal the book after he weds me. I shudder, my insides freezing with fright. I will worry about marrying the Raja after I secure the throne. Devin and I step into the underground passage after Anjali and Brock. We return to the palace in good time, but Brock passes the chapel entry and continues onward. The path changes from dirt ground to stone stairs, challenging my quaking legs. Anjali pauses at another door. Captain, you and Brock find another way in. The Viraji and I will enter here. If anyone asks, she slipped away from you. Meet up with us in the Tigris Pavilion in 5 minutes. I doubt that Anjali would have brought us this far only to betray us, but Devin hesitates. He subtly brushes his hand across the daggers hidden at my back, reminding me that I am armed should Anjali prove to be untrustworthy. I try to hearten him with a short smile, as I follow Anjali through the door. We emerge into the south portico of the Tigris Pavilion. Anjali hustles across the open dark patio to the wall of weapons. Arm yourself, she says. Whoever finds us needs to believe we have been sparring. I draw Yasmin's daggers in time to dodge the Khanda Anjali brings down next to my face. She grins. Don't look so frightened. If I wanted to kill you, you would be dead already. I thought you put a viper in my bed. That would be Lakia. Anjali rotates and our blades meet. You're surprised? Yes. My arms nearly buckle under Anjali's might. Even if I were not weakened, she is stronger, faster, and more experienced. Lakia wants the tournaments to end. Not more than she values her rank. She thinks you will steal it. Anjali kicks me in the thigh. I stagger to the wall and brace against it, recovering my breath. But Lakia and I are not scheduled to battle each other. As it turns out, no one is. Someone planted scorpions in the rooms of Lakia's challengers tonight. Two fell with fever. One will lose her toe where she was stung. The other lost her whole hand. Anjali lunges at me, her braid whipping behind her. I block her with both daggers, one on each side of the sword, and hold her off. After the injured Ranis were found, Lakia ordered a bed check and found that you were missing.
But you said Lakia planted the scorpions.
No one will report her if she did. Anjali pushes closer to our locked blades. I heard what you said about my father. You're wrong about him. I volunteered to come here. I drag the blades down, metal screeching, and back away.
You heard that?
Devin and I were whispering, and she was far in front of us. I hear everything the wind tells me. My mouth opens in surprise. I had thought that Anjali was a trembler, but gaolers hear the secrets of the wind. Austin is cleverer than I supposed. His daughter's powers make her the ideal informant to position in the palace. Anjali tilts her ear into the breeze. Someone's coming. Though I hear nothing, she swings her sword. I barely block it in time. She jabs at me again, and a deep voice calls from the dark.
Found her.
I lower my daggers to see one of the kindred's imperial guards in the shadows, still and expressionless. Lakia stalks in after him and eyes our weapons.
What are you doing in the wives' wing, Anjali?
I could never imitate the kindred's imperious poise. She has mastered it over many years.
Sparring?
Anjali twirls her sword with a swaggering smile. Kalinda invited me.
The Raja would be very put out if you killed his Viraji when no one was watching.
Lakia's tone borders on contemptuous.
Go back to the courtesan's wing where you belong.
Anjali replaces her weapon on the rack and shoots me a smirk. See you in the arena. Lakia paces toward me.
That's a unique pair of daggers.
She lifts my arm to hold one up to the moonlight. I compose my features, refusing to shy away. Her guard watches from behind her, though I doubt that he will step in to defend me.
Where did you get them?
They were a gift.
They were Yasmin's. Lakia's gaze narrows. I have not seen them since my sister tried to run away.
You were there?
I warned Tarek of Yasmin's treachery. She was running off with his heir. I wrench my arm from her grasp. You betrayed your sister! Lakia reaches down her side over the bulge of a hidden knife. No one is loyal to their sisters here. What reason do they have with you as their leader sabotaging them from within? Lakia hisses like the asp she planted in my bed. I see a flash of silver by her thigh and sink into my fighting stance. She raises her knife to my throat. I tighten down on the daggers in my hands, but they might as well be empty. She could drive her blade into my jugular before I could lift them. Her dark eyes flatten to pools of endless nothing. I will sleep better knowing you are dead. Kindred, you found her!
Lakia looks at Devon entering the patio. He and her guard rest their hands on the hilts of their swords. A game of intimidation. Lakia sneers and lowers her knife.
I keep mine firm in my grip and start toward Devon on tottery legs.
Lakia blocks me. I will find out what you were doing tonight.
There are no secrets here.
It takes all of my self-control to harness my fear. I level her with a chilly stare and then skirt around her, calling back over my shoulder. The palace may have a shortage of sisterhood, but it has an endless supply of secrets. 26. Manas turns rigid when he sees Devon and me approach him outside my chamber door. I thought you were off duty, I say.
I thought you were in the chapel,
Manas rejoins.
Soldier, Devon warns. May I remind you that this is the Viraji?
Manas faces his commander.
No, sir. Do you need to be reminded?
A vein in Devon's forehead bulges.
You're excused from your post until further notice.
Manas recoils with a hurt expression. He must be confused by his captain's behavior. I rise to his aid. Captain, he is only concerned...
Viraji,
Manas says sharply, and then he bows and marches away. Good gods, he's mad, I say, watching him turn the corner. Devon and I go inside my chamber, my head pulsing with every footstep.
That Imperial Guard uniform has gone to his head.
Devon sighs at his own aggravation.
Manas is tired. I've been overworking him.
Do you think he knows we left the palace?
I doubt it, but we have to be more careful. Manas owes everything to the Raja. He will not stay silent if he believes we have wronged him.
Devon helps me lie down on my bed and rearranges the pillows behind me. The linen smell of sunshine and lavender.
This arrangement is for the best. Manas can get the rest he needs, and I will reassign Yatin to guard Natesha in the courtesan's wing. While they are gone, I will look for the book.
My gaze swings to him.
You're going to look for the Jala?
He takes off his turban and lies down, facing me.
Once I find it, we can negotiate for Hustin to help you leave the city.
Leave Vani. That would mean no battle match, no wedding, no risk of the Voider being released. I stop before my hopes rise too high. How will you do in 2 days what Hustin hasn't done in 19 years?
I have greater motivation than Hustin.
Devon takes my hand in his.
I want to be with you, Kali.
Ever since I saw you eavesdropping in the temple, I've wanted you for myself.
His deep voice eases through me like a sweet ache. This is everything I have wanted to hear. But earlier tonight, you said...
I was trying to do what I thought was best. Everything has changed now. You are...
I cringe inwardly, waiting for him to say, a demon, evil, a dirty Buddha.
Remarkable. I will never meet anyone like you.
You don't mind that I'm a burner? Devin looks down at my hand, inspecting every line and curve of my palm. The low lamplight brushes the side of his face, warming it with a golden shadow.
I have known Brock is a Buddha all my life. I thought I was saving him pain by not acknowledging who he is, but when he needed me most, I turned my back on him. I won't make the same mistake with you.
He lifts my hand to his cheek.
You would be a fine Ronnie, but you have another choice.
I want to leave together. We can go back up the Alpanas and hide. We can make our own fates.
A tepid breeze carries in from the balcony, ushering with it the hushed rustle of palm fronds. I lean in closer to him.
Of course, Jaya would come too, he adds.
My smile blooms. He knows that I would not go without Jaya, but there are others to think of. What about your mother and the rest of the courtesans?
Devin kisses my fingertips and my heartbeat quickens. The Buddhas will free them once we find the book.
By then we will be on our way.
He presses his lips to a tender spot on my palm, and my mind turns fuzzy.
I will build us a modest cottage with a prayer alcove. Outside we will have a meditation pond
and a garden for Jaya to grow flowers. Devin smiles and kisses my pulse hammering at my wrist.
We will have fields and fields of greenery for our sheep and a watering hole to swim in. I will build a fire every night for you to sketch by, and we will decorate the walls with your art. When we go out at night, we will look for the Samia beacon in the distance.
He has drawn a better image with his words than I could sketch. I can see Jaya trimming her flowers, and Devin watching over our sheep. I can imagine warm meals by the fire, and the Alpanas standing guard over us, keeping everyone else out, and our peace in. I am tempted to escape into the life he has built, a promise of happiness waiting for us to jump into. I could leave here and never look back, but I do not know that Devin could. I brush my fingers through his soft hair. You would give up being a soldier? It's your fate.
It is one fate. Being a guard for the Empire is an honorable destiny, but more honorable would be to share my life with you. During the raising, I almost lost you.
His voice clogs.
I cannot let you go.
I turn over his bandaged hand, still healing where I burned him. Holding on to me has already caused him injury. Would it be right to let him leave his family, his career, his identity as a soldier? My hands wander to his face and stroke his jaw.
I don't know, Devin. If the gods brought us here, shouldn't we obey?
I fear his answer, but I cannot make him any promises until I know without a doubt that this is what he feels is right. Healer Baka used to say that there is no higher peace of mind than doing what the gods would have us do. I have never been certain enough of what the gods want to let that stand in my way. But Devin has. I will not rob him of that surety. He rests the length of his body against mine and pulls me to him.
Obedience may be the greatest virtue, but the gods do not expect us to sacrifice what makes us happy, and nothing makes me happier than you.
I rest my forehead against his.
Leave this place with me, Kali.
His whispered offer lights up the deepest trenches of my soul. This is what I have wanted, for Devin to take me by the hand and lead me into the labyrinth of his heart. We could have our dream of peace and family. But this hope is too precious, too vivid to look at straight on. I want this. Need this.
cannot have this. Devin cups my chin and lifts my gaze to his.
Will you come with me?
Staring into his unguarded eyes, I stand with my tiptoes hanging over the brilliant abyss and let myself fall. Yes. Devin touches his lips to mine and draws me deeper into his arms. He kisses me slowly, and then urgently. He kisses me with his hands on me and my hands on him. He kisses me until my lips and heart ache for dawn to never come. Despite my pleading, the sun makes its daily debut in a rust-streaked sky. Daybreak's first rays brighten my chamber to a dusky hue. I cuddle into Devin's side and glide my hand up his jaw. "Don't leave," I whisper. He kisses my palm. "I have to search for the Jala. I wish I could stay with you instead of going to the tournament."
"I'm sorry I won't be there."
He smooths back my hair.
"But you have to go. You have to play the role of Viraji Kali. The Raja has to believe you're his champion."
I would rather be myself, but I can only be that person with Devin. He stands, leaving coldness on his side of my bed. I sit up to kiss him. "When will I see you?"
"Soon,"
he promises against my lips. He pulls on his jacket and goes to the door. He sends me a smile that lays a blanket of contentment over me, and then he leaves. I settle into my bed on a thick exhalation. I feel different, and not only from spending the night in Devin's arms. My bones do not ache, and my head is clear. I reach over my shoulder and feel for abrasions, but they are gone as well. I close my eyes, and a single star burns, a guiding light in a black velvet sky. I finally feel how I had hoped I would every time Healer Baka persuaded me to try a new treatment. Healthy, whole, and strong. If my first day of being a full-fledged Buddha is any indication of what is to come, this may not be as terrible as I thought. Asha comes in with my breakfast tray. I stretch out on the other side of the bed to give the appearance that I slept there.
"Good morning, Viraji."
Asha sets the tray on the table and pauses to look at me.
"Yes?"
I ask. She frowns to herself.
"You have a glow about you."
"I had a good dream," I reply, smiling. Asha says, as she busies herself tidying the chamber. I get up and pull on my robe. A flicker of movement draws my gaze to the balcony. Brock's face fills with a broad grin. Asha tugs down my bedspread, her back to the wide balcony, and I sneak over to Brock. I shove him behind the same drapery Devin and I hid inside, and I follow behind.
Brock's eyes sparkle. "Been here before?"
My face warms.
"What are you doing here?"
"I'm here for your lesson."
"It will have to wait," I whisper. "I must leave for the tournament soon."
He stays close enough to almost touch. His skin smells of soap, and his copper hair is slightly damp, darkened to burnt amber.
"I will be brief. We can practice on your servant."
"No! You aren't using Asha!"
"I won't hurt her. I used to practice on Devin all the time."
I squint at him.
"He let you do that?"
Brock shrugs one shoulder.
"Didn't think to ask. You have to learn to use your powers. You cannot let them go to waste."
He slips out of the drapery before I can stop him and creeps up behind Asha. I observe from behind the curtain, afraid to move and draw her attention. Brock places his hands on both of her arms. Half a breath later, she falls forward onto the bed.
"You dolt, what did you do?"
I hurry over to Asha, who is slumped on her side.
"I parched her, like I did to the courtesan in the carriage."
Brock bends over her. By all appearances, she is asleep.
"See? Still breathing. Parching doesn't hurt, and so long as she doesn't see me, she won't remember. She will stir soon, and then you can try."
"I won't!"
Asha's eyelashes flutter. Brock puts his hands on her again, and she collapses face down.
"There. She will be out a little longer."
He repositions Asha's head so that she can breathe. When she starts to wake, put your hands on her skin. Every mortal has a fire within, the essence of who we are. Feel for that soul fire and draw it out.
I have no idea what you just said.
Feel for mine. He places my hand in his. Do you sense the heat? Some say soul fire is a buzz or a tickle. I concentrate on the warmth rising off him, and my skin tingles.
I think so.
Asha groans. Brock moves my hand to her arm.
Go on.
Pull her soul fire in. I reach for Asha's inner fire and locate a well of buzzing warmth. Wrapping my mind around it, I draw it in and an intense glow fills my mind's eye. The light is too big, too immense. Unable to hold my inner fire back, I push it at her. Brock yanks my hand off Asha, and dizziness washes over me. He catches me from reeling.
You pushed instead of pulled. Good thing I was here, or you would have scorched her.
He checks Asha's breathing.
She's all right.
I lean against the bedpost and wait out the white dots zipping around my vision.
Scorched her?
What I did to your coachman,
Brock replies with a grim, set look.
Oh, I say.
He means Jivan. I would be angry, but Brock and I were enemies then. I look at Asha, picturing her as a pile of dust, and what he said strikes me harder.
I nearly killed her?
I wouldn't have let you. I know that it's challenging to contain your fire, but this is a skill you must master. A good burner never reveals his powers. She will parch her opponent, weakening them by drawing out their soul fire, and then she will end the battle without anyone knowing what she did.
Devious, but also ingenious. I can weaken my opponents and finish them in a way that no one could trace back the victory to my powers.
But there is a flaw.
What if my opponent is armed? How do I get close enough to touch their skin?
That's up to you. I'm only here to teach you burner skills.
Brock runs a hand through his damp hair, preoccupied with his duty.
There's more. You can burn low if you aren't careful. Fire takes fuel, and so do we. Eating helps you restock your powers. Regardless, you could use some more meals.
He pinches my skinny arm. I tug away from him and his quick grin.
You can also burn too high if you take in a lot of inner fire from others. To get rid of the excess soul fire, you need to expel it in waves. You know how heat ripples off fire? You cannot see it, but when you get too close, it singes. That's a heat wave.
We will need somewhere safer to practice that.
Somewhere with less cloth. And people.
Brock looks down at Asha and starts to lift her veil.
I wonder if she's pretty under there.
I smack away his hand.
Help me with her.
We lift Asha to lie more comfortably on my bed and stand back. She looks peaceful.
She's going to wake with a horrible headache.
I look at Brock sidelong. For all of his lightheartedness, it must have been painful to leave his family and join the Buddhas. Who taught you to use your powers?
No one. Burners are the rarest Buddhas and the most destructive, so naturally the Raja sought to annihilate us first. My mother knew what I was and hid it. Everyone thought I was feverish, but when I got older, Hostin found me. He was looking for Buddhas in hiding and recognized my symptoms. He helped me raise. After that, I read about the fundamentals of burner abilities in Kishan's private journals. The rest was trial and error.
Noise travels up from the courtyard where people gather for the procession to the amphitheater. Brock peeks out the balcony.
Don't you have to be somewhere?
I groan. He knows full well that I have to get to the tournament.
No wonder Devon didn't miss you.
He didn't?
Brock slants his eyebrows together, affronted.
He did, but he blamed himself for your death, so give him time.
Brock starts to the balcony.
Where is my elder brother now?
Looking for the book.
The Jala?
Brock stops mid-stride and leans heavily against the wall.
That's a different Devon than I know.
Will you help him? I do not add that more is at stake than my bargain with Huston. Devon can decide whether or not to tell his brother about our plan to leave Vani.
You're more likely to milk a scorpion than find the book. I have looked for it everywhere.
Please keep trying. And Brock? I tuck my robe tighter around me. Jaya has been listening in on Gotham's conversations with Tarek. She may have learned where to find the book. He shakes his head.
You should not have included your friend. But since she's already involved, we will pay her a visit. You should practice parching today.
At the tournament?
The key is stealth. If you can parch someone there without others noticing, you can parch anywhere.
After what I did to Asha, I am hesitant to use my newfound talents. But if Devon cannot find the Jala, I will have a greater chance of winning my battle match with my powers. Still, I am afraid to test my burner abilities and risk revealing them, or worse, accidentally scorching someone to cinders. I glance at Asha's motionless form and pray harder that Devon succeeds. 27. Raja Tarek meets me in the main entryway. Morning, love. He kisses my cheek, and then slants back and frowns.
You look tired.
I look like me. This is the least done up that I have been since I arrived. Asha woke just before I left. She was baffled about falling asleep and apologized over and over for her laziness. She did not remember being parched. I felt so guilty about letting her think that she had shirked her duties that I ran out the door before she could fix me up properly. I woke early to train. Tarek clucks his tongue.
You should not stress yourself. You are my champion. I have every faith in you.
He places a firm hand on the small of my back and steers me outside. A line of elephants waits in the busy courtyard. I climb up to the howdah on the first elephant and notice the rubies I tore off have been replaced with more. Tarek notes their reappearance as well.
Ah, they recovered my jewels.
I force myself not to react. His soldiers recovered them. They are not new rubies. They are the same ones I threw to the crowd. Regret grates at me. I do not want to think about how many people the soldiers must have harassed to get back those precious stones. But I do know that Tarek retrieved them as a warning for me not to go against him again. The procession is every bit as elaborate as yesterday. More people pack the roadway, all of them cheering and waving, and I realize that Brock has asked the impossible. I cannot practice parching with so many eyes on me. Though, if I could, I would test my abilities on Tarek. He rests a hand on my knee and leaves it there during our travel. I peek at it intermittently, expecting his hand to slither up my leg. But we reach the amphitheater without a single one of his fingers stirring. I suspect that he used to sit with Yasmin this way. I abhor his nearness all the more. Tarek, Lakia, and I go to the Imperial box overlooking the arena. The events start with Farisha's match. She is the courtesan who asked about my health during the declaration ceremony. She is to battle Manju, a courtesan in her late 20s. All four gongs chime, sending a tremor down my back. Farisha attacks first. Feral in her movements, she stalks Manju like a wildcat on the hunt. I fear for the older courtesan, waiting for Farisha to spring with her sharp daggers. Farisha prowls closer and closer to Manju. Inevitably, Farisha attacks and Manju falls, struck down by the swiftness and accuracy of Farisha's blades. Farisha raises her knives to the crowd, soaked in her opponent's blood. Tarek cheers with the crowd, and my stomach gurgles in repulsion. Farisha must still win the victor's match before she secures a position battling me. Although it is callous, I wish for her to lose, so that I never have to confront her in the arena. The tournament continues with the second duel, another gory, cringe-inducing sight. For most of the morning, there is no safe place to rest my gaze. I cannot watch the challengers battling, nor can I look down at the courtesans in the terrace without thinking of Tarek drowning them. And I cannot look at Tarek without wondering if he is aware that at this very moment, his stronghold is being searched. I hate that Devon is combing the palace without me. But as soon as he finds the Jala, we can use Hastin's help to get away. Once I leave, the rest of my challengers will have no one to fight for the throne. I do not anticipate that Hastin will let Tarek live long enough to claim another final Viraji. And so the tournament will be over. All I must do is my part. I must stay here and play the role Tarek has given me. During a midday meal of roasted lamb, which I pass over so as not to gag, a messenger enters the imperial box. I follow him out of the corner of my eye, watching him whisper in the Raja's ear. Tarek looks at me, and then back at the messenger. My worries vault. Something could have happened to Jaya or Devon. The messenger leaves, and Tarek returns to his roasted lamb, cutting it into precise, bite-sized chunks. He is playing coy. I hate to feed into his strategy to draw me in, but I cannot sit here any longer without knowing what is happening at the palace. Your Majesty, have you received unpleasant news?
Why would you say that?
He pops a piece of lamb into his mouth and studies me. A message is often urgent, I say, trying to act offhanded. Tarek pats his knee and smiles.
Join me, and I will tell you.
I am in no position to deny my ruler. I go to him, and he pulls me into his lap. He smells of warm eucalyptus oil and the spices on the meat. Lakia curls her lip at us and turns away with her plate of food.
How would you like to have supper with me tonight?
Tarek plays with my hair, wrapping the ends around his wrist. I compel myself to relax in his arms. Supper?
General Gotham and his new wife have agreed to dine with us.
That's very thoughtful, Your Majesty. I will not pass up the opportunity to see Jaya. But if the message were about supper, why would Tarek be reticent to tell me? He brushes aside my hair and kisses me behind my ear.
After they leave, you and I can be alone.
I lower my gaze to conceal my wrinkled nose. Tarek tips up my chin, and I startle at his cold eyes.
You would not deceive me, would you, love?
No, Your Majesty. Still glaring, he presses his lips to mine and works them like he did the piece of meat. His rough kiss brands me as much as a number on my hand. I hold my breath, my stomach cramping with disgust. Tarek finally stops and rests his forehead against mine. Hours ago, Devon did the same. Only I wanted him to touch me.
We will be together soon, love,
Tarek whispers, twirling my hair. His forced intimacy suffocates me. He is not speaking to me, but to Yasmin. I am merely a vessel for the woman he desires. The pampered smell of his oiled skin and the stink of chewed meat on his breath curdle my insides. I have to get away. I stand, and pain shoots across my scalp. My hair is still wrapped around Tarek's wrist. He yanks on it like he would a rope, and I fall to my knees before him. The servants and guards in the imperial box quiet. Lakia swivels back to watch us.
You smell different today.
Tarek lifts my hair to his nose. Does he detect Devon's scent on me?
Is that new soap?
He says. He means the ginger lavender soap the aquifer used to wash my back. Yes, Your Majesty, do you like it?
Very much.
Tarek releases my hair, his expression distrustful.
Yasmin favored the same scent.
I try for a flattered smile at the morbid coincidence and return to my chair. For the remainder of the meal, I steal glances at the Raja, but he ignores my attention. His disinterest unsettles me almost as much as my suspicion that the message his servant delivered was not about supper. The victor's match takes place in the suffocating heat of late afternoon. By the time Farisha slays her last challenger and secures a finalist position, my nerves are scored down to bone. Tarek has warmed to me again, but he's preoccupied. We leave the amphitheater, and I realize that he has not had a single drink today. The return procession goes on forever. I expect to break away from Tarek when we enter the palace gates, but he holds my hand, and we descend the rolling stairway pushed up to the elephant's side together. In the courtyard, he does not let go.
"Supper will be served soon," he says.
"Do I have time to change?" I pretend to be crestfallen. I have to get away from him long enough to see Devon and hear how the search went. Tarek smiles wide.
"I will escort you to your chamber and wait for you."
His proximity stifles the air like walls closing in around me. He hovers near my side during the long walk to my chamber, his guards behind us. No one stands guard outside my door. I pray that Devon is not visible within. Asha greets us with a low bow.
"Your Majesty, Viraji." My gaze darts around the chamber and I relax a fraction. Devon is not here.
"Asha, I need to change for supper. Would you bring me the jade sari, please?" Asha hastens to find the garment, and Tarek's guards take up their posts near the door. I step behind the dressing screen and exhale slowly. I breathe more easily without Tarek's insufferable nearness, but he is still too close. I can hear him wandering my room. Asha brings me the sari. From her troubled eyes, I sense something is amiss.
"What is it?" I whisper. "Captain Naik has been imprisoned."
My blood runs to ice.
"What for?" "I don't know, but he is in the dungeons."
Fearful tears spring from my cold regret. Whatever the reason he has been detained, it must trace back to me.
"Are you dressed?" Tarek asks. "We don't want to leave our guests waiting."
"Almost," I squeeze out. Asha drapes the pleated sari over my shoulder and dries my eyes with her sleeve.
"Hide your pain," she whispers. "The Raja laughed when the kindred threw hot oil on my face for bringing her supper late. He cares nothing for your tears."
She tucks the tail end of the sari into my front waistline.
"Hurry."
My heart aches for Asha, but I drive away the fear making my hands shake. Play the role. Be the Viraji. I gather every tattered scrap of courage I possess and step out. Tarek's gaze devours me. He steps forward and fixes the coal around my eyes where a tear must have smudged the color.
"Has something upset you, love?" His concern borders on mocking.
He knows that I know about Devon. I am tempted to touch him and push all my fire into him until he is nothing more than a heap of dust. I am confident I have enough hatred stockpiled to hurt him. But could I do away with him? Even if I were able to scorch him and evade his guards, I cannot risk trying until I know what he has done to Devon. I fix him with a taut smile.
"Not at all."
One side of the Raja's mouth curls up, and he leads me by the arm to a secluded atrium in the wives' wing. The atrium is enclosed by high walls and lush greenery. The intimate garden is scented with hibiscus and shaded from the setting sun by blooming magnolia trees. The second I step inside, my inner fire shrinks. Though the desert night air could not be warmer, dread chills me. My burner abilities are gone. I went so long without my powers that I immediately recognized the sensation. Does Tarek know? He could have brought me here to disarm me, but he sat beside me all day without any indication that he knows what I am. I do not think about it for long, for I see Gautam and Jaya. I restrain a gasp. My friend's face is bruised more than before, and her lip is split. scar across her cheek has been reopened, cut in a precise, purposeful line. I wrap her in my arms.
What has he done to you?
The Raja knows, she whispers back.
My windpipe seals shut. Knows what? That I am a burner, about Devon and me? That we are after the Jala, that I am aiding the Buddha warlord? I have so many secrets that I do not know which to prepare a defense for.
Tarek invites us to the table. He and I kneel on floor cushions beside each other, and Gautam and Jaya sit across from us. The table is set with elegant plating and silverware, including carving knives, golden chalices, and satin linens. A platter of bread and honey has been set out as an appetizer. I touch none of it. Jaya tucks her arms and legs close to her body, like an insect curling in on itself. I wish that we could link hands under the table like we did in Samia. I could gut Gautam for what he did to her. The cut on Jaya's cheek had healed, but now it will leave an ugly scar. A servant offers wine to the Raja. He waves her away and selects a portion of cheese that he lays on my plate.
Good matches today, wouldn't you say, General? A headache forced me to miss most of the morning, replies Gautam.
I resist the urge to look at Jaya. I want to praise her slyness for poisoning her husband. But for all I know, he caught her and repaid her with new injuries.
I did see the victor's match. That courtesan of yours, Farisha, is a master with the blade. The Viraji will have to dirty her hands with a sword. A slingshot will not hold up in the arena.
Why don't I use my fists? Like a man, I ask, with a pointed look at Jaya's split lip. Tarek strokes my arm to shush me.
See her spirit. My Viraji is eager to battle. Now, Jaya...
My friend shrinks under the Raja's full attention.
How are you enjoying your stay?
Very well, Your Majesty. Your gardens are lovely.
You should tour more of the grounds. See my execution yard.
I'm certain there are lovelier places for her to visit, I say, laughing lightly.
Are there?
Tarek's question is meant to set me on edge. I want to parch him unconscious for threatening my friend. When will he tell me he has imprisoned Devon? What is he waiting for? Chuckling to himself, Tarek inclines toward me.
Glare any harder and you will peel off my skin. Relax and enjoy the evening.
I could no more relax there than in a den of wolves. Servants set out a roast goose. Above us, the fire-washed sky cools to inky azure, and Tarek and the general discuss the tournament further. Jaya curls her hand around her supper knife and picks at her food. I try to catch her eye, but she will not look at me. At the end of our tedious meal, Tarek wipes his mouth clean on a napkin and smiles.
I have arranged for entertainment.
Jaya's gaze jumps to mine. I know that look of fright. The last time I saw it, we were outside the temple when an avalanche started and she told me to run inside.
But I have no time to run now. The avalanche has struck.
Into the atrium walk several imperial guards.
Terror drives icy spikes into my bones.
Between the guards, shackled, in irons, is Devon. 28. Chains lock Devon's wrists behind his back. His uniform jacket is missing and his undershirt torn. His face is beaten nearly beyond recognition. The lips that kissed me this morning are swollen and bleeding. Yet Devon stands with his chin high and his gaze forward. Behind him, floating on a cloud of arrogance, walks Lakia. The kindred is followed closely by...
Gods, no. Manas.
Captain Naik, this isn't one of your better looks, says the Raja.
Gautam chuckles and I cut him a sharp look. That is your son.
I heard you were poking about the palace grounds. Find anything of interest?
Devon stares straight ahead. Gautam answers for him.
We caught the captain associating with a burner.
Panic drives a battering ram through me. Rock must have been captured as well.
You wouldn't be aiding the Buddha rebels, would you, Captain?
Tarek asks.
Not my most loyal of soldiers who roped me to a boulder when a Galer attacked. Not the man I trusted with my life and the Viraji's life.
I should have let you die, Devon says, meeting the Raja's gaze. Tarek barks a sardonic laugh.
You will beg my forgiveness for that when you're being crushed under a pile of rocks.
He clasps a hand on my shoulder.
The Viraji will do the honor of casting the first stone.
My heart dives to my knees. I would never stone Devon.
The Viraji is as guilty as the captain.
Lakia lifts a book in her hands.
This was in her bedchamber.
She lays Buddha origins before the Raja.
That belongs to me, Devon answers. I hid it in the Viraji's chamber on the bookshelf by the door.
Tarek arches a questioning brow at Lakia, and she nods begrudgingly. That is where she found the book.
You were hiding it for your Buddha accomplice?
Tarek prompts Devon.
Yes, Your Majesty. The Viraji did not know it was there.
I cannot bear to listen. Why are you doing this? My eyes shout at Devon. His gaze pushes back his answer. I have come to read his thoughts as well as Jaya's, and I see his request clearly. Save yourself.
He does not want me to put up a fuss. I am to let them drag him away, innocent in all except that he wished to be with me. Captain, Tarek says, for conspiring against the throne, you are hereby stripped of your military command and sentenced to death.
Tarek pours himself a chalice of wine in celebration, grinning like a lynx with a sable in its jaws.
Your execution is set for dawn.
Devon licks his bloodied lip and says nothing, his gaze so far off that he could be across the desert.
Tarek watches me, waiting for a reaction. My instincts scream at me to torch him to a pile of ash, but I still have no powers.
Tarek dismisses his soldiers with a wave, and they lead Devon away. My gaze claws at Devon, begging him to look at me, but he does not glance back.
Raja Tarek, thank you for the meal. Gautam blots his greasy lips with a cloth. Will you attend the captain's execution? The Viraji and I will be there.
Tarek's smile twists his ruthlessness deeper into my back.
And, General, I expect you will control your wife. One more slip-up, and she's gone.
Gautam bows his head.
I apologize again, Your Majesty.
Jaya lowers her watery eyes. What happened? Was she caught with Devon and Brock? Is that why she cannot look at me? Was it her fault?
The General hauls Jaya up by the arm.
They leave, and I notice her supper knife is missing. I last saw it in her hand. Admiration for her courage surges through me. Great Anu, protect her.
Lakia stays, Manas flanking her.
He must have been involved in Devon's capture. Devon warned me that Manas would report on him, but I did not want to believe that the Empire would mean more to him than their friendship.
Manas,
says Tarek,
your loyalty is commendable. I will arrange for you to visit the courtesan's wing as thanks on my behalf.
Manas bows in appreciation. I look away, sickened by him.
Tarek,
Lakia says, her expression steaming.
What will the Viraji's punishment be? Manas reported she spent last night with the cap-
I will do nothing.
Tarek lowers his voice to a concise snap.
She is my champion. She will defend the throne in 2 days, and I will see her unharmed when she does.
You would wed someone who is unfaithful?
Lakia asks, eyes wide.
I would wed her immediately if it would not enrage the gods. The tournament was instituted by Anu, and, like his son Enlil, my Viraji will be champion.
Tarek takes me by the arm and drags me from the pavilion, his guards following. I try to rip away, but he holds me fast.
You try my patience, love,
he says.
2 dozen women are willing to die for your throne, and you jeopardize it for a nothing soldier.
I never made any pretenses about wanting you, I say, breathless from his swift pace. I was never asked what I wanted at all.
I do not